Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 99 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Scott Myers, an associate professor of screenwriting at DePaul University. Welcome back to the show, Scott.
Yeah, Rob, great to be here as we continue this journey through one of the great World War II movies, Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, for sure. So minute 99 begins with Miller waiting to move along without any type of argument, and ends with Mike chasing after Ryben. So I first want to mention that, you know, in the interval since yesterday's episode, so I went back and looked at the novelization, and, you know, pretty much most of the dialogue with Steamboat Willie over the last few days is pretty much the same from him. I mean, he does have a few other references that he throws out here and there. He even tries singing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game" at some point or whatever. But you know, it doesn't change the fact that in the movie it's more concise and it works probably better than it does in the novelization from that perspective. You know, they gave us enough of a taste of who, you know, of who Steamboat Willie is and, you know, why Miller should try to keep him alive or anything like that. You know, some of the, one of the lines that I love is, you know, we talked about this, it was yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, you know, the one line that I think they should have kept in that they didn't was, it was on Tuesday when Steamboat Willie screams out "F*** Hitler" and he says it twice, and Ryben just turns to him and goes "F*** you." And yeah, I think that would have been a little more effective if they would have kept that in there.
The audience would have laughed at that. I think they would have enjoyed that.
Exactly, and it goes perfectly with who we all know Ryben is. The line would have fit in perfectly. You know, and it's not as if you know, Spielberg was worried about you know, what rating his movie was going to get based on the dialogue. You know, so he didn't need to cut it for that purpose. But whatever, it's neither here nor there. So yesterday we ended things basically with them letting Steamboat Willie away. Letting him go, and the men start a little bit arguing as to whether it was a good decision or not, but it was still, you know, the decision that Miller made. But Ryben's the only one who really is adamant that there is something wrong with this situation. And Miller just looks around and goes, "Get your gear, let's go." And Ryben just doesn't move. So Mike turns to him and goes, "You heard him. Gear up. The captain just gave you an order." And then Ryben goes, "Yeah, like the one he gave me to take that machine gun? Because that was a real doozy, wasn't it, Sarge?" So, you know, Ryben's giving a little bit of lip here, starting to cross a little bit of a line, and Mike turns to him and goes, "Soldier, you are way out of line." And he goes, "Yes, sir. That was one hell of a call coming to take this nest. But what the hell? We only lost one of our guys going for it. I swear, I hope Mama Ryan's real happy, knowing that little Jimmy's life is a little bit more important than two of our guys. But then again, we haven't found him yet, have we, huh?" And, you know, we talked a little bit about this yesterday. I like that they give us Ryben's voice here. You know, this is it was the prevalent voice, but now it's the dissenting voice. And even though yesterday we had Mellish and Jackson throw out lines, you know, about the situation is not the greatest, we don't have them defending Ryben here. You know, they've sort of skirted away. And they're not getting into this whole argument. You know, because we have Upham clearly stating his side of it, and now we have Ryben, who is completely against this and thinks it's a bad idea. And as we mentioned yesterday, ultimately, Ryben is correct in his assessment of the situation, which, again, goes to the irony of the way that this story unfolds.
Says they, we've seen them, they've bonded because of being the band of brothers out there, in the field of battle. As close as they've gotten, this is still a breach of military protocol. You don't question your officer, the leader, the group. You don't question them. And he's doing that. And so that's probably makes sense while the others are holding back. Ryben, is not one to withhold his opinions. But still, this is not according to military protocol. You don't do that. It's like,
right.
Grounds for court-martial,
Correct.
What he's doing.
Yeah. Well, just wait. He's going to be breaking a few more rules, as they move along here. But again, this is another example, we talked about this yesterday, of showing the audience both sides of this story and showing this dilemma that Miller needed to, to make a decision on. It's one of those Solomon's dilemma type of thing, where neither decision is going to be the best decision. So I like the way that they do this, and they give us characters who we can identify with their viewpoints on this. And it's
yeah,
very
clear. If Steamboat Willie had been full. Like a real jerk,
yeah.
Then that would have been pretty easy. I think, even Miller would have gone along with, let's just whack this guy and go forward. But he's appealing to the soldier's humanity throughout. And obviously, pleading with them and showing them that he's, what was that word, obeisance? He's obeying them. But so it adds to the moral complexity and the emotional complexity of the whole thing.
Right. But I mean, based on what I know and what we all know about what happens later in this movie, I think that this is Steamboat Willie is doing this all as a facade.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
He's not necessarily the most personal of people because again, we see later on in the movie, he lines up that shot to kill Miller. It's not as if it's not as if he doesn't know he's shooting Miller. He knows that he's shooting the guy who saved his life.
Yeah.
Which shows that this is a character who is pure evil and doesn't care about the fact that, what goes around comes around, or whatever phrase you want to use for the whole thing. You might have some sympathy for the character at this point, but when the full character arc comes around, you realize that there's no reason whatsoever to sympathize with it.
Yeah, that's why it's so ironic when where he ends up. You're just sitting there going, God, if Miller hadn't let him go,
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. If not only if Miller hadn't let him go, if Miller wouldn't have had the argument with Ryben, if Miller wouldn't have listened to Upham, again, it goes back to the idea that in certain situations, and obviously war is one of the most prevalent ones, you're making decisions and you don't know what's going to happen, where those decisions are going to take you. But you try to decide the best thing to do at the time with the information and data that you have to make that decision.
You remember when we had this discussion about, is this an action movie or is this a drama with action? A little thought experiment. Imagine this, if this were a straight ahead action movie. You Sly Stallone is playing Rambo or Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't think this issue would not have come up. They just would have shot the guy. Right.
That's right.
Just get rid of him. Right. They probably would have articulated the character a little differently too. Like he would be more of an asshole, but to Tom Hanks' credit, he's always willing. I mean, he made a mistake and a lot of these actors don't want to be that that kind of person. They don't want to play roles where they make mistakes, you know, in action movies in particular. And so this speaks to, I think, the filmmaking team, and I'm sure Tom Hanks was involved on the scripting side of things. He's, you know, I know that. And so the fact that he's willing to be a guy who makes a mistake, which turns out to be a fatal one, says a lot about him as an actor, because it just makes for a much more complex, it makes it a drama and not just an action movie.
Correct. So, yeah, I like the way they do that with that. And I mean, I like the fact that Ryben brings up the fact that, you know, they've lost two men because of Ryan.
Yes.
Because, you know, obviously he doesn't agree with having to do this, this particular, mission, you know, but, you know, you don't hear him complain that, you know, how many people were killed, you know, on the day that they stormed the beach on Normandy, or even the fact that you know, they gave him an order on the beach. They told Ryben to go back and get a new gun from some dead guy or from someone dying on the beach. You know, that type of thing. Because when he mentions, you know, the order that you gave me, my first thought when I was doing the research now, what jumped into my mind was the order that he had to go get his get a gun from the beach. Mm. You know, not even the recent firefight that they just had. Mm. Which again, Ryben might have seemed like a coward a few weeks ago when he told Miller that they shouldn't be going you know, against the radio tower. But, you know, once again, it shows that Ryben was right. You see, I think that's part of the irony here, that you know, as I mentioned, that I like Ryben, but a lot of people don't like him. And but I think that part of the idea here is that this character is right about these decisions, but nobody wants to hear his full perspective on things.
You know, do you think they don't like him? I was going to ask you, do you think they don't like him because he's mouthing off against the commanding officer, or?
I think they don't like him because they think he's just too brash. I think that's what it comes down to. Because again, if Miller would have listened to him and not done the assault on this radio tower, so Wade would still be alive. And here's another example. If you know, he would have listened to Ryben here and killed Steamboat Willie, then Miller and probably Mike would both be still alive right now. Or whatever, they'd be alive at the end of the movie. Now, probably more, you know, you don't know what would have happened in the continuation of what happens after that battle, but whatever. The bottom line is that you know, it's interesting that they give us this character who has the right instincts here.
Yeah.
But no one wants to listen to those instincts, because everyone wants to be, you know, everyone still wants to go on their own path and do the things that they feel are the right things. You know, I mean, one of the things in the novelization, this might have been in some of the screenplays that you read about this movie, is that Ryben's family owns like a dress shop. I mean, they talk about it in the movie a little bit, but the whole time that they're there, he keeps wanting to go to all these little places in France in order to get like different types of stockings or pantyhose or stuff like that, in order to be able to use it for his family's business.
Uh-huh.
I'm actually glad they cut that out, because it sort of made things a little strange, but you know, it was a character quirk that they, you know, he's giving speeches about, you know, where you can find the best lingerie in France, you know, things like that.
From a screenwriting standpoint, those two guys had to die. You know, it's like I'm sure, because, you know, it's the horror of war, you know, and you have to take out people that we've made a connection, and then the audience, with, in order to drive that home. And you know, jumping way ahead, because you're in these episodes with Earn This, that makes that statement even much more powerful, because you have to look at the totality of everything they've done in order to save Ryan's life, to find him. Right. And so, you know, it's like that, the weight of that is also the subtext of what, I'm jumping ahead again, but when Miller says that to Ryan, that is included as subtext in there. Like, those guys died. So, you know, you need to earn this.
So, right. Not just those guys. He's dying himself at that point.
He's dying himself.
He wants him to earn the fact that he gave up his life for him.
Yeah.
You know, which makes it even more of a powerful perspective of what he's saying and how he's saying it.
Yeah, the weight of responsibility on Ryan.
Correct. But I again, what you just brought up about the fact that from a screenwriting perspective, these characters had to die. I guess that's also the difference between a drama and an action movie. Because again, going back to all of those action movies, it's most of the time, you know, the characters are invincible. The lead characters are invincible. You're not gonna have very many movies where Stallone or Bruce Willis or Schwarzenegger are going to be dying at the end of the movie. But you have a movie like this. You know, even you can look at it, the Bridge on the River Kwai. One of the things that I love about that movie, and spoiler to anyone who hasn't seen it, and shame on you for not seeing it. but the fact that just about everyone's dead at the end also is just, you know, it always shocks me every time I see it. They're like, I can't believe that they did that. But again, it's because it's a drama, and they want you to show the horrors of war. And in battle, you know, even someone who's the hero isn't necessarily always going to be, coming home, stay on his own two feet, on his two gams.
It'll be in a casket. That's great ending. Oh my God, that movie.
Yes, seriously. And Horvath just gets really pissed off at this point of everything that Ryan's saying, and he goes, "Here you go." And he grabs him to try and let him go in the right direction, and he goes, "Get the hell off of me." And Horvath goes, "Ryan, get up. You're up, fall in." And Ryan just said, "I'm done with this mission." And he just starts walking away. And at a certain point, you see that Mike bends down, and I have no idea what he's doing. It makes it look as if he's, taking something out of his bag or something like that, but you can't really tell what he's doing. And then Ryben just has had it and starts walking away. And as he's doing that, Mike starts chasing after him. And then he says, hey. And Upham realizes that things are starting to get more and more verbal here. You know, there's something big going on. And Upham screams, "Sir." And Mike just starts screaming at Ryben. He goes, "Don't walk away from your captain." And Ryben just shows that he doesn't care anymore. He's had enough with the way this whole thing is. And I like the fact that we can now see that the two of them were standing on opposite sides of the sandbags, and that's why Mike has to run around the sandbags. Even though, actually, you know what? It might even be a continuity error. Because it doesn't look like Ryben is climbing over the sandbags at all. He somehow has, morphed his way through those sandbags. Do you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I don't.
Because we do have earlier in this in this conversation, we see Mike and Ryben. And he actually picks Ryben up off the ground, and the two of them are standing next to each other. So then why would Mike have to run around, the sandbags. Very interesting.
Yeah, I guess just, you get so caught up in the argument and the building, rising tension.
Well, that's why we're breaking this down the way that we're doing.
Yeah.
We can see these little intricacies of the movie.
Yeah.
But Mike is really starting to get angry about this whole thing. I mean, we know he doesn't like Ryben anyway. So, this seems like more of an excuse for him. But hey, if it works, it works.
Yeah, that's in tomorrow's episode.
Seriously. And that's the way this minute ends. So people are going to have to come back tomorrow to find out what's going to happen with this little argument between them.
You know, what's interesting, Rob, is that each one of these minutes it ends with like a little cliffhanger. It ends with this question. What's going to happen next? Which is just that's a great object lesson in storytelling, is keep creating situations where the audience is going, what's going to happen next? What's happening? What does this mean? Keep them curious.
Most movies don't do it at intervals of the minute, but yeah.
But in this particular instance, every single one, it seems to be like, oh yeah, it's like, leaves us wondering what the hell's going to happen in the next minute. Yeah.
All right, so every Thursday, we have a segment called Say What Thursday. So it's a little bit of a game. This movie has a lot of familiar and famous actors in it. So the game is a simple one. I'm going to give you a movie quote and tell you the year, and you have to try and tell me who's the actor who says it and in what movie it is. Now, obviously, I'm going to be using actors from this movie. Okay, so, but because there are so many of them, every week I just choose three that it could be. Okay, so your three actors that these quotes could be from are either Ted Danson, Tom Hanks, or Harv Presnell. He's the one who played General Marshall at the one who gave the instructions that they have to go find Jimmy Ryan. He's the character. Or the real person, who reads the Bixby letter all those months ago. Right. So it's going to be one of those three. It's either going to be Ted Danson, Tom Hanks, or Harv Presnell.
Oh, wow. Right? Okay.
All right. So like I said, I'll give you the quote, and I'll tell you what year it is, and you have to try and tell me which of three. Now, it could be that I'm not going to use all three of these, during the course of the five quotes that I'll give you. So it doesn't. There's no guarantee.
I thought you were going to pick Vin Diesel because Vin Diesel's in this movie in a role, but
he is in this movie. Yes. I contemplated it, but I decided that since you have a history with movies from the 80s and 90s, so every one of the choices that you will have this week are movies that came out in either the 80s or 90s, and Vin Diesel was not making movies then. So
yeah, okay, all right, okay.
So I decided to take that. Okay,
Fair
so
enough.
The first one that you have is from 1996.
Okay.
Yep. And the quote is, "I'm not talking about your damn word here, Jerry. What the hell were you thinking? Jesus, look, I don't want to cut you out of the loop here. This here's a good deal. I assume that if you are not interested in getting a finder's fee, you won't mind if we move on the deal independently."
I should know this. Jerry. Oh. Fargo.
Excellent. Oh. Very good. And who is the actor?
Is this the guy who plays his wife's father?
Yes.
Is that this guy from who plays Marshall?
Yes, it is. Harv Presnell. Very good. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Yeah, that was great. Very, very nice job there. All right. The next one is a movie from 1988.
Ooh. Okay.
All right. And the quote is, "We are all God's animated cartoon."
We are all God's animated cartoons. Hmm. Well, I'm tempted to think it's God's animated cartoons. I was tempted to think it was the Roger Rabbit movie, but I don't know if that came out in 88. That seems early.
First of all, it did come out in 88, but it's not Roger Rabbit.
Oh, that did come out in 88?
Yes.
We are all God's cartoons.
We're all God's animated cartoons.
Animated cartoons. 88. I don't know. That one doesn't ring a bell.
So again, it's either going to be Ted Danson, Tom Hanks, or Harv Presnell.
Ted Danson.
No, it is not Ted Danson.
Tom Hanks?
Try again.
Tom Hanks did this. 88? What was
this? It is Tom Hanks, yes.
The Burbs or something like that?
Nope, it's not Bunny The Burbs.
Pit?
The Burbs.
Money Pit?
No, Money Pit was 86.
Oh, okay. Bad. 88. Not Big. Big came out later, right?
No, Big came out in 88 also, but it's not Big. And The Burbs was 89. This is Tom Hanks did two movies in 1988. One of them is Big, and the other one's this movie.
88. What else did he do? We're all God's animated cartoons. Well, see, The Burbs, Money Pit, I've already mentioned that.
The Burbs was 89.
Philadelphia? No, that's later, right?
No, that's 93.
Oh, God. What film am I missing here? I don't know.
It also stars Sally Field.
Oh, Punchline.
Yes.
Punchline. Oh, yeah. I remember. Yeah, I should have known that.
Exactly. All right. Okay, so once again, the next one is from 1993. And the quote is, "I misplaced an important complaint." That's their story. My side of the story is, "The night before it was due, I worked on the complaint in my office and left a copy of it on my desk. The next day, the complaint vanished. No hard copy. All traces of it mysteriously gone from my computer. Miraculously, a copy was located at the last minute, and we got it to court on time. But the next day, I was summoned to a meeting with the managing partners who were waiting for me in the conference room."
Philadelphia?
Yes. Very good. Very good. All right. Next one is also from 1993. Yeah, I read black literature. Will Chamberlain's book changed my life.
Oh, man. Yeah, I read black literature. Wow. I don't remember this. Since we haven't had a Ted Danson. I'll throw out Ted Danson just because we haven't had anything with him.
It is Ted Danson. You are correct. Do you have any idea what movie it was that he made in 1993 when he says that line?
Well, of course, he's probably doing Cheers at that point, so this would have been during hiatus. 93. He wasn't in that movie with Bette Midler and Shelley Long. That was Peter Coyote. That would probably was earlier than 93.
No, it wasn't that. Not Big Business. No, that wasn't Big Business. I'm trying to remember. I know what movie you're talking about, but that was a fun movie.
Ted Danson in a film. I don't know. I can't remember.
Wait, was that one? Was that Outrageous Fortune, the one that you were just referring to?
Yeah, Outrageous Fortune. Yeah, that was that movie.
That's not this movie. That's not the movie that we're talking about. But yeah.
No. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, Will Smith was also in this movie.
93.
Yeah.
That wasn't. I don't know. Will Smith and Ted Danson. Will Smith. Yes. What was the name of that thing?
It was directed by Richard Benjamin.
Oh, Richard Benjamin. Wow. He was in that thing with Snary Cut. Oh. 93. God, I have no idea. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't, you know, he was in 3 Men and a Baby or one of those things.
That was 89.
Yeah. He was in some movie with Whoopi Goldberg, I remember, that was not very good. That's when they became an item. I think they sort of dated.
In what year was that?
That was right around this time. Was,
and therefore?
Oh, is this it?
Yes.
What was the name of that movie then?
It's called Made in America.
America, Made in America. Okay, yeah. All right.
Wow.
Stretching my brain cells here, man.
That's okay.
Will Smith's in that. I don't remember that. I remember Whoopi Goldberg and him.
He plays their daughter's boyfriend. It was one of his first roles. Yeah.
All right.
So, and your final one from 1989. Oh, come on. Now, I don't have a lot of experience being one of these intimidating policemen. I've never had to threaten anybody.
Oh, okay. Well, if it's 89, I mean, that's when K-9 came out. I don't know whether the Turner Hooch come K-9. Out at the same time.
It's not.
No, I know. Turner Hooch?
Yes.
Yeah,
I figured I would throw in Turner and Hooch for you there.
I got a funny little story about that. I remember after K-9 sold, it was a big spec script sale. I mean, it was a big deal. Like, went around and met everybody. And we went to Disney, and my writing partner and I, and the guy said, you know, we're thinking about suing you guys. I'm like, what? Yeah, we had this project about a cop and a dog. So that was Turner and Hooch. That project had been what they call a development hell. It just sort of been floundering. But when Universal bought K-9, they went, whoa, 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 wait a minute. We got this thing. There must be something going on here with a cop and a dog movie. And so that resurrected the project. And that's how it was dead, basically, until K-9 sold. And then they brought it back to life. So anyhow.
So you should have sued them, not vice versa.
Exactly. You know.
Has statute of limitations gone by?
Yeah, too long ago. Wow, that was a real interesting trip through cinema history. That whole era, you know, that's like 40 years ago, some of these things, 35 and 40 years ago. Jeez.
Yeah. All right. Excellent.
Well, that was fun.
Thank you for playing. That was fun. That was fun.
Yep.
All right. So, Scott, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
My blog, goindothestory.com. Screenwritingmasterclass.com is my online educational resource. Got a wonderful film school at DePaul University where I am an associate professor of screenwriting there. And then my book, The Protagonist's Journey, An Introduction to Character-Driven Screenwriting and Storytelling, #1 bestseller on Amazon for about 7 months. So pick it up if you like screenwriting and storytelling.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Instagram, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So, Scott, do you feel like coming back tomorrow to finish off this week, but also to find out what's going to happen between Mike and Ryben here?
Oh, yeah. We got a cliffhanger here, Rob. Don't walk away from your captain. You know, it's tense. We got to figure out what happens.
You think we're going to have a cliffhanger at the end of tomorrow's episode also?
I don't know.
Exactly. All right. Well, until tomorrow, earn this.
My solitude. You